Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program, broadcast on the Community Radio Network. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to part two of the story of Eli McGavin in this week's award-winning Listen to Older Voices program. If you missed part one, we learned that Elaine is a very warm person with a wonderful sense of humour and a love of life. Brought up in a close-knit family with one brother, we learn that she was born in Colac, Victoria, enjoyed school and won a place in the Victorian Junior Squad for netball. Married twice, she eventually settled down with Ron. At the end of part one, we learn that Elaine is in fact the sister to Athol Guy of the Seekers. This week, Elaine talks about her time working in Melbourne's well-known Theosophical Bookshop, her life with Ron, her job as secretary to the Chief Health Surveyor in Hawthorne, her trip to Thailand. Ah, life is full and rich for Elaine. Now, here she is finishing her story about life with her famous brother. Now, having Athol Guy as your brother, that must have had a huge impact on your life
in the 60s. It was wonderful because I was so proud of him. And, of course, all of their concerts and of course, knowing all the boys since they were, Athol was at school with them.
Right. So you grew up with them as they developed.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Did they ever rehearse at home?
Well, yeah, Athol used to do a little bit of rehearsal at home, but not very much because they really needed a hall or whatever.
Yes.
But there was always music in our house because our father, of course, being a musician, that's when I was very little, but when he went to war, of course.
Yes.
And mum played the piano too. So, you know.
So there was this musical sort of root was there, and all it had to do was be nurtured and it grew.
Oh, yes. Right. Well, Athol was winning a Stedford's playing the piano when he was very young. So he's always, he has a very good musical background. Yeah, like Judith too.
Yes.
Because she went to the conservatorium.
This sounds like a very stupid question, but I'm going to ask it. Did you go to many of their concerts?
Oh, yes, all of them.
Yes.
Well, as many as I, yes.
It must have been very remarkable to have had, not just a brother who was an accomplished musician, but to get that sort of almost adulation in those days.
Yes, it was. Mm.
Did that impact upon the family at all? I mean,
yes.
In what way?
Well, they were all very proud of him. And of course, you know, we met such interesting people.
Of course.
You see, I mean, from the entertainment world.
Can you think of some examples just as we're...
Well, when Athol, when he was 25, they were home from one of their trips, and at this stage, Mum was at a really low ebb, and Athol said to me, look, if I buy a house, will you take... Because Don and I only had a very small house in Blackburn, and of course I had the four children, and he said, if I buy a house, will you take Mum... Because Mum was living with me, then she was somewhere else, and then she was back. And so in the end, I said yes. I spoke to Don, he said, yes, we'll take Mum, because he always got on well with Mum. Mm. So anyway, he said, you go and find the house you'd like. So we end up buying one, or he did, in Hampton Street, Brighton, where I knew the whole area.
Of course.
So we took Mum there, and we lived there for about 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, he was 25, and he was home, and it was a big house, and I had a very big, big back garden and veranda and so forth, and Channel 9 rang and said, look, we want to give Athol a party for his 25th birthday. Would you mind if we had it at your place? He said, you've got a big space. And we said, fine, that'll be, fine. So they said, we'll send people out with the alcohol and waiters to serve the alcohol, and we'll provide the meat. Can you get some salads organised? So Mum and I made coleslaw
until it was coming out
our ears. And anyway, they had a lot of people came from Channel 9, people who were at that time quite famous. Mm. I've forgotten who was supposed to come, but I don't think it was Graham Kennedy. It might have been Bert Newton. That's another story. I knew Bert years and years ago.
Well, let's come back to that one.
Okay.
Let's come back to that one. I won't forget that one. But just tell us a bit about this one event,
yes,
in the garden.
That's right.
Sounds spectacular.
And it was a fantastic birthday. It was lovely. Athol really thoroughly enjoyed it. And, of course, they were all there, the Seekers. And then it was Philip Brady came. And he's on 3AW,
yes,
now. Well, it was Philip who came. And we met Philip, a very charming, very charming young man. Mm.
Bert Newton, of course, almost like our Bert. He's
That's
been around
right.
for so long, so much part of Victoria.
Yeah.
How was it that you came to meet him, and when was it?
Well, I have spoken about my friend Bonnie, mm-hmm, who lives here. Well, Bonnie at the time was working for, I think it was called Community something or other. It was a sort of charitable organisation, and she had been invited to do a radio, like reading things on a radio program with Bert Newton. So she met Bert.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, he was only about 18.
Right.
He's about 2 years younger than us, I think. So he would have only been about 18. And we always had, with our group of particular friends, we'd have a music Saturday, and we'd have a barbecue, we'd all just sing, just have a good time. And Bert came along, and we met Bert, and he was a very nice young man, a very presentable, nice looking young fellow, very slender, vain.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't know how you can be in show business and not have some of that.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, he was lovely, but he'd stand in front of the mirror and he'd go...
Ah, right.
And so, anyway, Bonnie, he used to do spruiking at, one of those theatres in Bourke Street, one of the old theatres that's no longer there. Bonnie and I were walking up that way one lunchtime from work, and she said, "We're not going past there. There's Bert. If he sees me, he'll drag me over," because she hates to be, you know. So she,
yes,
yeah. So we didn't do it because Bert would have dragged her over there, and she would have been, you know. But yes, I like Bert. He was nice. Don't we? Should we say he was vain? Do you reckon? Everybody would know he was. All those hair transplants.
I think at his stage of life, I think that would be water off a duck's back now. I don't think it would care one iota anymore.
I think it would. And anyway, Bert, if you're listening...
That's right.
If you're listening, you told me I sang like Jane Froman.
Well, I can thank you for his good taste of listening too.
Yes. I didn't sing like Jane Froman at all. I liked her, but...
Listen to older voices, revisiting through recollections.
You mentioned that you had, or you have had, two husbands.
Yes.
What happened with Don?
Well, that went along on a happy note until, I suppose, we'd been married about 15 years, I suppose, by then, and responsibility didn't settle well on his shoulders, unfortunately.
Right. So, what was it, a matter of growing apart?
Yes.
And that happens?
Yes, it does.
What did you do once you had separated? Did you feel isolated and alone?
I was fortunate. The children were then, they were at school. So, my aunt had set up and managed, I don't know whether you've heard of it, the TS bookshop. It's the Theosophical Society's bookshop in the city.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah. And
Russell Street.
Yes, she began it. And it began in Collins Street.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
It was Collins Street because at that time we had just... Look, the room would have been this big, really. It was not big. And she was a very intelligent lady and a great, great reader. She knew such a lot about the books. So she asked me to go and work with her so that I could sort of leap on the train at Box Hill after I dropped the children at school and then go in on the express and built out and come up to Collins Street and do my work and then belt down and grab the 3 o'clock train home and be there just in time to get them from school. So busy, busy, busy.
I was going to say, busy. It wasn't a slow life.
No, no way, no way.
Did you enjoy working in the bookshop?
I loved it. I loved it because I've always been a big reader too. So I loved it and I loved all the subject matter. And when she retired, I was appointed the manageress, the buyer, and I'm the one who put it where it is today in Russell Street.
Well done.
I set it up there, yes.
Because I think that's a legacy to you both then, because that must be the most well-known bookshop in Melbourne, if not in Australia.
Definitely in Australia. It was always the best mystical type bookshop of its type.
I was always intrigued. I mean, like many people, I was always intrigued to wander through because there was everything. Yes. You could just get sucked in so easily.
Absolutely everything. And, of course, there were things that a lot of people hadn't heard of before.
Very esoteric, yes.
All the natural therapies.
Which today... Every second bookshop's got them all over the place. That's right, but not then.
Not then.
That's right.
But that's where I met my second husband.
Whose name was...
Ron.
Is Ron.
Yes.
Right.
And he was involved with the Theosophical Society as well. So, and he was a naturopath.
Which, again, back in the 60s, there wasn't a lot of naturopaths around.
Oh, no. He was only studying then.
Beginning of his career, right.
Yes, it wasn't until after we were married he went back and did a course for the Southern School of Naturopathy. It was under Alf Jacka.
And when did you get married? What year?
To think about this.
Sort of.
It was 77.
Right. Around that period of time.
Yes.
Okay. So by now you've really established your own identity. You're no longer a shaky young woman. And you've had children, you've gone through one marriage, you've really got your own identity.
Yes.
What was life like once you married him? Did it change dramatically?
Oh, yes.
In what way?
Well, it's... When you marry, of course, you get used to each other's idiosyncrasies.
Yes.
So therefore... When you marry a second time, you have to get used to another set of idiosyncrasies.
Of course, yes. That's a very interesting way of thinking about it. I hadn't...
Yes. Yeah.
And was that difficult or was that an enjoyable? It's not like...
Well, I think it's always difficult.
Yes.
I don't think it can be easy. You work things out.
If I was to ask you to sort of summarise your life with Ron, how would you do that?
I think because we have the same beliefs and philosophies, it makes it a lot easier.
Hmm. Well, that's certainly a very good starting point.
Yes. Although I must say my sense of humour gets the better of me most times, but we were both interested in astrology.
Hmm.
And when he did something, or I did something that he didn't approve of, he'd say, "That's your Venus Neptune." And I'd say, "No, don't be ridiculous, that's your Mars and Scorpio." And we could sling insults at each other, and nobody knew what we were talking about. Well, they even cared less.
You're right, that's a very wicked sense of humour.
Yeah.
Ron becoming a naturopath, was that a hard task for him, or did it come easily?
Oh, he's always been a great scholar, you know. That didn't take him...
Right.
He had to really, I think... learned a lot more about being practical in business.
Right, rather than the healing part, the business side of it.
Yeah, the business side.
Yes.
No, certainly not any of the other, not at all.
Right. Did he run it from your home? Yes. So was that an interesting phase of your life or a difficult phase, or did you just take it as part of life and get on with it?
Well, because he had gone back to school and so forth because he wasn't working.
Of course. No income.
No income. But I worked.
Right.
And I was... Because at this point in time, we were living up just outside Kyneton.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, it was lovely.
Yes.
Yes. And I worked. I'd go down to Gisborne.
Right.
To work.
Right. Once he opened the business, was there a role in it for you, or was that his business?
No, it was his. He did that from home, and... At that time, I was working. I was secretary to the chief health surveyor in Hawthorne at that time.
And what did that involve?
They used to call them the health inspectors, but
right.
they were upgraded to, they were called health surveyors, yeah.
Right. And what was your job? I mean, we all know a secretary in general is, but
yes.
What did you actually do?
Organise the immunisations and take all the complaints and...
And were there many of that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Well, what would keep people complain about?
Well, it was a whole range of things. Someone had left rubbish somewhere and someone... It was very interesting because apart from the immunisations and so forth, they did the head lice checking. So I was there 6 months before I could look at someone come to the desk with a child and say, my child has the nits, before they'd go away and we'd start scratching. It was dreadful. But you eventually come to terms with that.
Yes.
And then the boys used to go out and do food testing. They went then, and they used to say they'd go to a butcher, they'd take three samples of different meats, and we'd keep one in the refrigerator. One lot would go to the government analyst, and I forgot what they did with the other one, but at any rate, they'd all be tested. And if anyone had anything in, you know, they couldn't use preservatives in a lot of the meats, but if they did, well, then they would take it to court.
Right.
So, also with meat pies, they'd check those, and if they didn't contain the adequate amount of meat, well, they could be prosecuted.
Right.
They tested for all kinds of things, and food poisoning was absolutely... Yeah, you know, that was when everybody went into top gear, because that was...
Serious stuff.
Serious stuff. And so they were very diligent in their jobs there, and they checked absolutely everything, and the way people conducted their food handling, which in those days, my boss at the time decided that that wasn't good enough. So he was the one who began the food handling classes.
That we have today.
That we have
today.
Which
are mandatory today.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
How long did you stay in that job with the health department?
15 years.
That was a long period.
Yeah, until I retired, actually.
So that was your last full-time employment?
Yes.
And what happened when you retired? Was that also Ron's retirement?
Yes. Then we lived in Burwood at that time. Then we sold that, came up here, moved up to Chum Creek.
Why did you choose Chum Creek?
It was beautiful. It had a lovely view right up at the top there, and it was so peaceful. We'd always loved the area and the country, and we moved there.
Because this program is heard by people all over Australia, so a lot of people wouldn't know. Certainly wouldn't know of Chum Creek, and possibly not even the Yarra Valley.
No, of course not.
How would you describe it?
Well, it's a bit hard to describe if they haven't got a clue what the Yarra Valley's like, really. It's the foothills of the Great Dividing Range. When we moved up here about 18 years ago, it was a very pristine, slow town, Healesville. Lovely, dreamy place, you know, where you could... In from our place, you could see over the mountain tops, and we had a gorgeous big gum tree we looked almost into the branches of.
It's a very lush area,
and
isn't it?
And it's a lush green area.
Chum Creek itself.
Chum Creek is very, very hilly, like all Healesville is. But Chum Creek's really steep out there. But it was lovely because, although it was steep, we had... half an acre, well, I think it's probably a bit more than half an acre, and Ron grew all of our vegetables and fruit, and it was wonderful to wander out and, you know, get the figs or the nectarines or apples or plums or whatever was going.
Has any of that survived today? Do you still have those fruit trees around?
I don't live there now because Ron had a coronary about 5 years ago. So it was too steep. He couldn't do that hard work. So we moved and bought a unit.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, featuring the life and times of older Australians.
So now here we are, 2007. What do you do with your life now? How do you fill your time?
Well, I'm a member of Probus, the Healesville Valley Ladies Probus, which is a fantastic, fantastic group of people.
What does Probus do?
Well, it's a group for professional and retired business people.
Mm-hmm.
It's related to Rotary. We have a general meeting once a month, and we have a guest speaker. We have a lunch out once a month, outings. We organise outings. We organise trips. I've been to Thailand with a group.
Aha, tell us about that.
Oh, wonderful.
Was that your first time out of Australia?
Yes, it was.
Were you with Ron or were you...
No.
On your own in a group?
Just with the group.
Yes.
And another lifelong friend who came, who belongs to another group, Probus, came and joined us, and we had a lovely time.
Tell us about your impressions of your first trip outside of Australia then.
Well, Ron and I travelled all around Australia because we loved camping and caravanning and...
Just being outside, yes.
And being outside. So I was sort of used to the outdoors and clean air and what have you. And to get out of that plane at Bangkok, and that it's an enormous airport, and then to strike that wall of heat, and it was the open drains, I think, in Bangkok that sort of really stunned me.
Yes.
Especially after coming from the health department.
I was going to say, you'd be there.
I was thinking, gee, then, Mike, this would be interesting. Yeah. So,
how did you find the people?
Are lovely. The Thai people are lovely. Absolutely lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so sad. Well, it was tragic. When the tsunami damaged so much of that lovely place.
Right.
And we had been to Phuket. We stayed at that big hotel there, and it was just beautiful.
Right.
And it was, to think those poor little people who were there, it was just terrible.
What sort of lasting images of Thailand are left with you?
I love the north as well. I love the north right up near the border, because we went over to Laos and to there, and what I really liked about that, the people were slightly different to the ones down south. They were far more Chinese,
mm-hmm,
by appearance.
Yes.
And I found that they were very lovely, and I remember thinking how absolutely poverty-ridden some of these people were. Mm. Because my friend Bev and I had gone into a little toilet, and you know that the Asian toilets sometimes aren't all you'd expect. But of course, this particular one was spotless. This lady had flowers and things in it, and she was cleaning, and she had a mop and what have you. It was lovely. So Bev said, "What do you think we give her a tip?" So I think we each gave her a dollar, the equivalent of a dollar. Well, she took our hands, and we couldn't understand what she was saying, but she was so grateful.
It really gives you a perspective, doesn't it? Because
it does.
Sometimes you wouldn't even think twice about a dollar anymore.
No.
It obviously meant so much to her.
So much to her. Yeah. Because their wages are so poor.
Yes.
Very enlightening trip. Some of their history and those temples and such were quite breathtaking. Mm.
When you come back to Australia from these journeys, do you see your own country differently, or is it like a well-worn shoe and you fit back into it comfortably?
Fit back into it very comfortably. But, you know, no matter how much you see of Australia, you still miss something, so you can go back and have another look.
Yes.
You know, my friend Bonnie, he's not from here, my friend and I, we had been to Tasmania when we were about 17, 18, on a holiday, and we had an absolutely fabulous time, and we decided we'd do the Mark II version, so we went back early this year.
Right.
Yes, and there we were with our grey hair and our suitcases and hired a car and took ourselves all over the place.
Good for you.
And we had an absolutely delightful time.
Oh, I can see that in your eyes as you tell me.
Yep.
Yes. So, a very interesting thing here, there would be many people a lot less in years than you and I, who would look at people who, when they get to 50, 60, 70, and say, well, gee, you know, life is just about over then. But it sounds quite the opposite with you.
Oh, quite the opposite. You know, this afternoon I have my computer course. I have to do my PowerPoint.
Right.
I'm learning, battling along with that. But no, I'm involved in that. I'm with the Lions in the op shop down here. I put in a bit of time down there.
So you're putting time in with Ron,
yes.
You've got your computer classes,
yes.
You've got Probus,
yes.
You've got Rotary,
yes.
And you still travel.
Yes.
Life is very full.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, and I'm going to Brisbane. Ron and I are going to Brisbane in, actually it's a fortnight. Fortnight today we're going to Brisbane because I have a daughter and son-in-law up there and my grandchildren, so it's wonderful.
Yes.
Looking forward to seeing everybody and a lovely little daughter-in-law and all
great.
The rest, so, yeah.
In order to finish up, there's a question I don't ask everybody, but I often ask, and I'd like to ask it to you. Living and dying, it's all part of being a human being,
mm.
and you have to accept one with the other. And yes. Hopefully you've got many years left yet. But when that time does eventually come around and you pass on, how would you like to be remembered?
In the first place, I believe in reincarnation, as you could imagine, coming from a theosophical type background. So, in that sense, death has no
it's just a continuation.
No fear. It's a continuation. In another chapter of a long list of lives, but I would like to be remembered as I'd like to be remembered as someone who was warm and loving and who was always prepared to give life a go, and I could always tell a good joke.
Elaine, I think that is a wonderful place for us to finish with a laugh. Thank you very much for sharing some of your story.
Thank you.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Community Radio Network.